Welcome, friends. This is Red Ice Radio. Good to have you all, regular and new listeners, with us. My name is Henrik Palmgren, and we are coming to you from Göteborg in Sweden. It's good to have you all with us. I hope that you're comfortable wherever you are in the world and ready for another radio program. Our website is redicecreations.com. That's the place to go to hear, see, and read more about what we do. Check out our busy news section on a myriad of topics, important and interesting news from around the world and beyond. If you like our radio program, check through our radio archive. We have a year of programs up there for you to download for free. If you want to have more and want to get access to the second hour of our interviews and our entire archive, going back to 2006, sign up for membership with us and get full access also to our video interviews, webcasts, and films. And today on the program, we have our friend Michael Tesserion back with us. He is behind the Origins and Oracles DVD series. He's the author of Atlantis, Alien Visitation and Genetic Manipulation, Irish Origins of Civilization, and Astrotheology and Sidereal Mythology. His website is michaeltesserion.com. And we are working with Michael on the Architects of Control DVD series as well. We've released program one already, and we are currently working on the second one right now. If you want to see it online, it's available in our member section. If you want to get a copy of the first DVD, simply go to Architects of Control for much more information. But here today, we are going to talk about conspiracy and psychology with Michael. We are primarily going to focus on man and his psychic epidemics. We're going to talk about the roots of tyranny. And we're also going to comment on The Fall of Republic, Alex Jones' latest film, from this perspective, and tie this into how we look at problems and how we look at solutions as well. So this is going to be a good show. Sit back, and I hope you enjoy it as well. So with that, welcome back, Michael. Nice to have you back on the show again.
Well, thanks for the invitation, Henrik. It's always a pleasure.
It's going to be really interesting tying all these threads together with you here today. And I think, as we usually do when we have you on the program, we can read actually an opening quote to kind of set the frame of the program. It's from Carl Gustav Jung. And he says, "We have lost our superstitious fear of evil spirits and things that go bump in the night, but instead are seized with the terror of people who, possessed by demons, portray the frightful deeds of darkness, that the doers of such deeds think of themselves not as possessed but as supermen does not alter the fact of their possession." And Michael, what about if we talk about the idea of the roots of tyranny, to begin with that idea? And maybe you can explain it, but for us in a nutshell, what you consider to be the roots of tyranny, Michael.
Well, basically, tyrants of every description arise in the world not by sending out troops, you know, to put people in chains, especially not in the modern age. The whole existence of any kind of tyranny or colonialization is a twofold, is a sort of a relationship. And the way I look at the world dilemma or any sort of existential problem, whether or not it's on a personal, individual level or on a social level, is to start asking why it is that man brings that particular scenario into being. And of course, that is a psychological profile and perspective as opposed to, say, a social or economic or political, you know, perspective. Because civilizations are born out of consciousness. They are designed and lived in by human beings. And the human being is, you know, he's made of consciousness. He has consciousness. And therefore, if that consciousness happens to be unworked, untidy, toxic, or dysfunctional in any way, then obviously it's a no-brainer that the republic that we find outside will also then be a reflection of that inner existential chaos. And therefore, to imagine that we can then run into that realm like the Keystone Cops or the Three Stooges and try to rearrange the furniture on the Titanic as if we're going to fix anything is tantamount to insanity. And we find ourselves in the state we're in today with tyranny ruling the world just as much as ever because man has not been looking at who he is. He's not been addressing the inner republic. He has totally avoided this. You know, I've often said he leaves consciousness at the door. And this is, I found in my work through the last, you know, so many years or whatever, that this is even being done in the so-called truth movement or inside what's called the alternative research community. They're doing it as well. And therefore, that's why the solutions are even still wanting within the so-called conspiracy movement, because I'm a fan of conspiracy movement. I'm a fan of what's happening. I often talk about the Age of Awakening, and I'm very optimistic about the way people are now being turned on heavily to politics and some of the deeper dilemmas that are going on. They're looking for answers, and they're going to find these answers. But I'm dismayed to find that, again, even within the conspiracy movement, you know, consciousness is being left at the door. And we can argue that's because 95% of the authors and researchers are Christian or whatever, or it's just a human trait in which, you know, questions of psychology tend to be considered unimportant or even taboo.
Yeah.
I mean,
I
get a lot of backlashing in my work where people, you know, call me dark and sinister and even pessimistic simply, and I mean simply, because I deal with things from a psychological perspective. There seems to be some sort of, you know, blinders on when it comes to really looking at life in a psychological way.
So do you think that's true because of what Jung, for instance, talked about in form of escapism, that we do absolutely anything to avoid facing ourselves, basically? Do you think that's the truth then?
Yes, I believe that 100%. He spoke about that man will basically do anything, no matter how absurd, rather than face his soul. And it's one of the most profound statements ever made. It really is. The comments that he made, you see, you know, are picked up by people like T.S. Eliot, the great poet, who said that mankind really can't bear too much reality. You know, we've talked on other shows, you and I, about man and his ideas of reality. Right?
Yeah.
That man has this sort of idea of reality, but it's not something that necessarily corresponds with reality as it really is. I mean, even in the Bible, you know, in the book of Mark, there's a quote that says, "It is from within, out of the mind of man, that all evil emerges." So it's not just the Jungs and the Freuds. It's, you know, it's an age-old situation. And there's an old statement that where there is no vision, the people perish. And I think that vision means a psychological understanding of life. And unfortunately, you know, you can go back to, like I said, the Bible, you can go back to Jung, you can even go back to Pythagoras, who, you know, was adamant that the problems that arise in society, you know, in fact, he said that you better know that it is self-chosen, the woes and the problems and dilemmas that come upon men. It's basically a self-chosen process. Now, my work is to try and show how man would do that. Because, of course, consciously everybody's going to go, you must be crazy. We're all out there looking for freedom, justice, and truth.
Yeah.
Man wants to live in harmony and peace. What are you talking about? You know, it's them. It's them over there. It's the Jews. It's the Jesuits. It's the Illuminati. It's some big, you know, monstrosity over there. And, of course, I'm not denying that that exists. But the epidemic that exists within the psyche of the leaders has a trickle-down effect. They want their poison, their particular dementia, to infect the rest of the world. We've gone into reasons why that is in other works. And also they seek avidly to help their slave, to make their slave identify with them. And this is, again, another important dynamic to look at, is the whole question of identification. So my work is to try and point out what are these hidden, obscure connections that allow this particular dance macabre between the external tyrants, who are, you know, you can take a Polaroid of them, they're the psychopaths, there they are. But what it is in man, I refuse, like Jung, to accept that man is just a passive actor in this particular drama. He's not.
You know, I want to talk more about identification a little bit later as well, but basically what you're saying is that the republic is falling because the inner republic is falling in one way. And I want to ask you as well about, in terms of psychologists and so forth, because this has been on the wall a little bit a while ago in terms of the alternative press and all this, that basically, psychologists say that conspiracy theories are nuts, and they claim that they have their answers because of this. So many people in the conspiracy movement, in one sense, understandably so, if they don't know anything more, kind of frown on psychology as a whole topic. So how do we bridge these two fields, so to speak? Because it looks like one doesn't want to look at the other, if you follow my train of thought.
Oh, it's inevitable, and I'm pretty much sick of it now, because I think that the work that we're doing with Architects of Control is actually one of the first ever projects, at least in a very deep way, to join these two fields up together. Psychologists always have a knee-jerk reaction to conspiracy. They believe that the disenchanted, disenfranchised man who's no longer getting his answers from, say, mainstream TV, who might be a sort of a loner or what have you, he is then sort of seduced into going to the internet and getting involved in all these woo-woo, you know, type of conspiracy things. This is how they tend to you know, cover it. But remember, when we're talking about psychologists in an American context, we're not really talking about psychologists. We're talking about, you know, sham artists, people who are not in my opinion, true psychologists at all. They may have a degree, they may be called psychiatrists and so on. But a real psychoanalyst or psychologist would never, ever debunk, you know, the people who are looking for the truth, regardless of what title that it has. They'd understand that, no, it's not about disenfranchised people. It's about awakening people. The people who are going to the internet and getting into the conspiracy subject matter are those who are now proactively looking for solutions. This is what they have to understand. And if you listen closely to some of the greater psychologists, and certainly even the great philosophers like Theodore Roszak and Jacob Needleman, even without using the terms conspiracy or alternative research or anything like that, or even dropping names, they themselves, just as pundits and activists and critics of society, are saying almost the same things that the few more braver souls within the conspiracy movement, you know, have been saying for years. And I've always predicted that in the years to come, you're going to see even mainstream pundits and talk shows and what have you, totally co-opting what has been going on beneath the radar in the conspiracy movement. It's already happening, and it's going to happen.
Glenn Beck, you have Lou Dobbs. Yeah. They're talking about this kind of stuff right now, you know?
In fact, that ties in, doesn't it, to the whole idea that if people cast their mind back even 5, 10, 15 years ago, the whole media was rolling around laughing about conspiracy theory, and yet now, from the horse's mouth, from the Brzezinskis and from the, you know, the Blairs and from all of the leading politicians, including the Bushes and all of these people all across the world, and we have their quotes, they themselves from their horse's mouth are talking about the global village, the psycho-civilized societies and the New World Order and the cashless society, all the things that, wait a minute, hang on, all the people that you threw darts at just 5, 10 years ago and had a good belly laugh over were saying.
Yeah. That is fun, isn't it? You know, how things can change like this. And what would you, ultimately, the idea also about, you know, the what we internally try to identify with happens externally. How about that idea if we put that on the bigger scale? Because this is a problem. This is difficult for many people to understand, and myself included, in that sense, that how is it that something that is happening out there in the world, that the incoming New World Order, so to speak, the system that you can see be brought into place, what does that ultimately have to do with me if I feel that I'm on the outside of that and don't want to have any part of it, if you follow my train of thought?
Well, remember, it's difficult to find out because we have an entire leviathan of education and media that has created a disconnect. They've dumbed down the rational individual, so these hidden connections that are psychologically based about how a man changes his world, and don't forget this goes back to the Greeks, who even said that a character is a man's fate, meaning the way you are, your kind of thinking, will appear in front of you as your fate, and then you have it on the spinner racks of today with things like The Secret and this idea of, you know, prosperity thinking, you know, and let's not even talk about the positives and negatives of that stuff, but it's been there all the time. But the mass media and the mass educational system is out to not let you see the connections between psychic energy and physical energy, because they don't want that kind of education to be there at all. One reason why we fall for it and we even make allowances for it, you see, is that they sell you this chimera of security and order and strength, all the very things that you don't have psychically. And they do this in very subtle ways, not just the obvious ways, but even subtle ways, like, you know, the whole thing with the global warming and the swine flu and many other sort of monstrosities that they throw up in front of us are actually simulacras to what's actually happening in the psychological temperament. They have nothing to do with the weather, and they have nothing to do with what it appears to be when it's put on the screen of the media. And in a nutshell, what happens is that they know that they've gutted the human psyche of those attributes that it really needs, its own inner strength, selfhood, you know, sense of coherence, reason, rationality, morality, virtue, all of these things, virtue for its own sake. These things have been robbed, dumbing man down so he's no longer a creator, he's just a slave, a follower. And so knowing now that they have emptied the soul of man, that they've raped his psyche, they now present external chimeras of that order and of that security and of that type of sensationalistic edification. And this is why we, as people, often buy into it, because we don't realize we're being seduced. In exactly the same way where religions have seduced man from an emotional and limbic point of view, so do the world establishment seduce us as well. And for those very broken souls who just can't get with the gig, then they've got their whole pharmaceutical, you see, leviathans, they've got their fake religions, they've got their fake New Age philosophies and all the gimmicks, and even a lot of gimmick psychology. as well to sort of, you know, patch those guys up and nail them together and glue them back together again so they're functioning, you know, slaves in the global village.
So in one way, what you're saying as well is, let's say a leader then who is very confident, very well-spoken, that's something that people probably will identify with if they're coming from a point of view where they lack these things, meaning that an Obama, for instance, is something that, that people will love that when that comes along because many people don't have these kind of traits themselves. Is that true, you think?
That's what it's all about. And see, the great Patrick McGoohan picked up on this in his Prisoner series where he has this line that's monumental and he says, everybody votes for a dictator.
Yeah, I remember that.
You know, everybody votes for a dictator because now, and then no, everyone will consciously say they're not. You know why? Because they go, well, I don't vote for your dictator. And then the guys over there go, but I'm not voting for your dictator. Everybody's got their own dictator. And then they say, you know, because it's a guru or it's a priest or it's a politician, they go, but I hate your dictator. My dictator's far better. So everybody is voting for the dictator in different guises.
So do you think that this is, in the larger perspective, it's true in terms of governments as well? If a government is very strong in that sense, almost bridging towards the fascist, that's something that people, if they previously have lived in a society which is more laid back, so to speak, that they will be more prone to kind of identify with the power that a government exudes, that they kind of like that in one way, and unconsciously they're bringing that in as well?
History tells us that case. History basically, and it doesn't matter if there's been some sort of left socialist movement or some other poxy feminist movement. It's absolutely, you know, believe it. There's a French philosopher said that tyranny is always better organized than freedom. And I can subdivide that by saying that man adores tyranny. Even in the Platonic system, they said that tyranny was much more needed than democracy. And of course, democracy is just, again, the sheep clothing to the wolf. Each individual lacking what is required inside, having endless enmity with other groups, you see, needing, of course, don't forget that if we're talking psychology, let's never underestimate the need for the father figure, which is known as the animus. The tremendous desire to have that specialist, that expert, that daddy figure to take responsibility for you so that you can just go to sleep. You can basically, you know, have this person take all the blame and all of these things. It's a crucial thing. We've had whole tyrannies in the East, in the communist countries, and we have a cult of the father figure. And I wouldn't say the healthy father figure, because don't forget there's also a very healthy father figure. I would say the utterly perverse father figure, which is mixed in with a lot of shadow archetypes and things like that going on. So it's always a situation in which man is always seeking to not only avoid responsibility, but like we have spoken about on other shows, he's desperate to alleviate the guilt that comes with living the inauthentic life. But unfortunately, by living the inauthentic life, he then creates, as we talked about earlier, this morbid, inverted tree of life in which you have these identifications, you have this denial, you have the denial of the denial, you have the justifications, and you have the need then for the decorated and furnished incarceration. You are absolutely scared to be Jesus of real freedom. And I don't care if it's in religion or it's in mental attitude. And we can see this being played out in the world today. And then you spoke about the dialectic. Yeah, but you have the left and you have the right. And you have the hot and the cold, and you have the good and the bad cop. You have the tyranny that's more expressive and more sort of, you know, in your face, sort of jackboot, gun to the head. And then you have the silken glove form of tyranny, at various intervals. Again, it's all tyranny, but it's, again, two sides of this hydra's head, a devil on one shoulder, an angel on the other, whatever way you want to look at it. But yeah, Ultimately, when you have the eyes to see it, then you know it's just 100%, tyranny.
In terms of a solution for the masses, do you think that that's something that never will come, so to speak? It doesn't exist because it is on the individual level. So would you say it's not worth to try to look for solutions that apply to a number of people?
Not while you're getting into bed with the government that has the disease and catching their version of gonorrhea. No. If people continue to work within the political system or even other sociological systems, they're not only not going to find the answer, they are actually party to the crime. Because it's almost like you, a high soul, a high, clean, pure individual hanging around vampiristic, low-energy people, you're not only reducing your own chances of sanity, you're not only compromising your own energy, your own material welfare, and your own sanity, you are actually, by definition, endorsing and perpetrating the culture, you see, of these other lower souls, these fallen ones. Because you have no higher value, you have no higher statement, and therefore you're actually, you're allowing these people by your participation in their gig to continue that gig. And there's no way that in an insane environment, this, you know, the Arno Gruens, the great psychologists have said this, and R.D. Lang very much emphasized it, is if you are in a abnormal society that appears to be normal, don't hope for sanity. Insanity is all you can hope for, or unsanity is all you can hope for, because you're existing in a culture and a civilization that is already, you know, demented and dysfunctional.
So in one way, I guess what you're saying as well, this is about truly breaking free. What about the idea of creating something new? Let's say you try to go off the grid. You're trying to break free of the Big Brother system, and you might be able to even do that with other people. In that sense, that can become a little bit more of something that you do with more than yourself, so to speak. You might break away, try to create a little alternative community somewhere or wherever, and these people might hold the same values. And I think that's something that would be, I guess, the closest to a solution for more people. Would you say that's correct, at least from the point of view that you're trying to do something new and you're not bound by the old regulations or the old system or the old way of doing things, Michael?
That is certainly one of the potentialities, but wherever man goes, he's a disturbing agent. See, this is the problem. What gives a community of like-minded, toxic, unworked individuals? When you saw communities working, whether it was the Vikings or the Shaman or the Sami or, you know, the South American Indians or the Druids, it was a holarchical model, but it was policed in a sense, I mean, positively policed by the shaman types who were able to work on man with psychic awareness and make sure that he was a clean soul, a sane soul, a hygienic soul. That's why the word sanity and the word, you know, the word sanity, right, is very similar to the word, what's the word for cleanliness? Sanitize.
Sanitation, or your sanitary,
yeah.
Right?
Sanitation, right.
Yeah.
And so the sanitizers, the sort of the shaman class were that. Don't forget that the psychology of which I speak in the modern age is very young. It only began with Jung and Freud, which is, 1930s. So obviously we're still in a very early stages. That's why I always tell people never get pessimistic. Because actually, when it really comes to man evaluating who and what he is, we are in a tremendously young and, early stages of it yet.
Yeah.
But to get back to answering your question more specifically, what is freedom? How are we going to gain it? Does it happen in communities or would it happen individually? You know, I go to there's a great line by Henri Bergson, the French philosopher, and he said that liberty consists in being entirely oneself.
Yeah.
So people go now, okay, where's the manual? How do I do that? Well, there is no manual.
Exactly.
Because
yeah.
A manual has to be produced by somebody else. The whole concept of being oneself is that you even form your own path, your own yoga, your own understanding. And then the way to do that is what is called apophatic. It is actually by negation. What it means is that you have to discover all the factors then, and I mean all of the factors that stand between you and your freedom. If freedom is identical with selfhood, then you have to examine in the world all the factors, and I don't care if it's your mother and your father and your brothers and your sisters and the teachers and the priests and the politicians, you have to make a study of all the factors that stand in the way of your selfhood. It's like, you know, peeling away veils and veils and veils of an onion or whatever, because hidden under all that junk is the self. And it's like I was talking about in the Los Angeles talk that I did 2012 in the future of mankind, and also what we talked about on disc 2 of Architects of Control, is that between the persona, right, which is the mask we show to the world, and the self lies the shadow, or more specifically, the shadow work. The shadow being all the elements that we don't like about ourselves that we forget and then forget whether we forgot about it. And in society, we project that shadow onto other people, either even nations, we even do it. And that's what we find ourselves in today. So when we look at all the traumas and tribulations that are happening today, even if you don't believe in one secret hand or brotherhood, you know, controlling both sides, say who are not, don't want to buy into the conspiracy perspective and don't believe that and don't want to. Okay, forget that. Open your eyes. Look around in the world. You see the conflicts arising again. And this culture of chaos, control, of problem, reaction, solution, or just of general social chaos and state of decay, whatever you want to call it, that is a symptom. That is, again, man projecting his own shadow complex onto other people. We do it even in our most intimate relationships. But Bergson was absolutely correct, and his words have been picked up by people like Ayn Rand and also by Mikhail Bakunin. And many other people have said this, that the only freedom is selfhood. And so then it goes to the heart of your question. Obviously, two of the greatest institutions that prevent men from coming to selfhood are religion and government.
Right.
To the point where even some people have said that even if, I think it was Thomas Paine, if a single government exists in the world, man can never be free. Government is a symptom of psychopathy. It's a symptom that you have no freedom, and more so, I would say, that you can't even have civilization. In fact, I would say that we are even completely taking a lot for granted when we even use the term civilization, because as long as one government exists, civilization is in retrograde or doesn't exist at all. And if people don't believe what I'm saying, just go and pick up the book Death by Government and find out the facts about what governments do to their own people. And then talk to me about civilization existing.
You mentioned a little bit about the idea of different escapes we were going into. People are potentially turning to religion in one way that they're going, well, in one way you can say backward. At the same time, we can see the death of religion as well. We can see that the New World Order is keen on throwing that out the door as well. So that seems to be, still many people go there, of course, as a solution to many of the problems. But government seems to be primarily offered now as a solution. Entertainment, not only talk about that, you like don't even think about any of this stuff. Just, play and have fun and don't think about any of this. But is there anything more you want to comment on in terms of how people are turning to religion before we go into and comment more directly on Alexion's film, The Fall of the Republic?
Well, I'd refer people to, our webcasts on the Brotherhood of Death, in which we show the whole question of, because remember, this would have to get in then. People need to watch that because we have to address the whole question of hierarchy connecting to psychopathy, hierarchy versus holarchy. There's a lot of elements to go into there. What I would say, of course, is that religion and government share one thing in common. Once we've established that they are, in fact, impediments to human freedom, and I mean that even not only on the personal level, but on the social level. Once we've identified them and we start to examine how they came into being, you discover that they're hierarchical, really, really hierarchical in their nature. And I've always identified that as being the hallmark, the stamp of, a psychopathy. But there's a reason why they're hierarchical. One is, we've talked about in the webcast of the Brotherhood of Death, is that that's their simple mechanical way of filtering out good men, of course, and promoting evil men. The hierarchy exists for that. It's like it works like a percolator. But basically, religion itself works on the limbic areas of the brain. It works on your faith. You don't have to have reason when they're asking you to use your faith and blind belief. And secondly, see, I have no problem in, I think actually, I'll say it bluntly, I think that the conspiracy movement is hampered by the fact that too many of the writers and investigators within this, in that movement, are in fact Christians, or sort of even lukewarm Christians or whatever, or at least are coming from some sort of wishful thinking that's saying that if man just gets back to his familyhood and a little bit of his, morals as is dictated by religion, then, the evil ones will just sort of roll up their red carpets and disappear. It's total nonsense. And I would go so far as to say, as I have in my work, that basically religion is a custom made for psychopaths. It's a kindergarten for psychopaths. So until there is the basically people, as they are in fact doing, awakening to these criminal syndicates, which is government and religion, they can't even enter into the first stages. And this is why you'll find so much, all the prime ministers and presidents, and I don't care who they are, always, working with the religious potentates and even using talismanic words that come straight out of the religions, using the symbolism that comes out of the ancient cults and so forth and so on.
So do you think that turning to religion is going backwards in one way, not progressing? Because on the surface, it might seem that turning back to a religious and moral way of life would be better, going back to, let's say, the 40s or 50s in America or something like that, that would be better in that sense, because it would be at least be not as bad as it is today because of the fact that they're trying to throw out religion and we're being subjected to a lot of problems right now. These problems are, of course, there because they want to give us a solution, which is the New World Order. So we know that all of this is artificial. But do you think that on the surface, that's why people want to go back to religion, because it was a safer time? It was overall a little bit more better than how things are today, Michael.
Yes, it is. And as I said, people, like I said, people have a relationship with the tyranny. They also call it into action. So again, even the religion is not really coming out of their way to do something to you. It's people themselves going to it. They are the ones asking for it. They're the ones who are going to read the gobbledygook in these scriptures. They're the ones who are going to murder in the name of Islam and Muhammad and Jesus and you know, in the cause of Judaism and all of these kinds of things. They're the ones doing it. And all I would say about that is that the tyranny, there's two kinds of tyranny. The tyranny is, government is more in your face. It's more monarchic. It's more autocratic. And it's saying, we will orchestrate wars. We will orchestrate, you know, camps. And we will lay down rules and laws and bylaws to make your physical life very difficult. That's an obvious form of tyranny. But how many people in the world have really understood the other more subtle, more sinister kind of tyranny that is, you know, perpetrated by the religions of the world? And if they ever, if ever anyone listening to this interview now ever didn't have the chance to witness that particular criminality of religion, well, now's your chance. Because just turn on the TV and look what is happening, you know, with the rise of fundamental Islam and all of this other stuff.
Mm, yeah.
So now is a perfect, because I said we're in the early stages of this and a lot of this awakening. And therefore, a lot of the things that are happening in the world are now absolutely, in one way, brilliant. Because it is going to convince people to pay attention and to see the underworkings and underpinnings of these kinds of tyranny. Man has never had a better perspective than now to examine it. But if he's already biased, if he's already coming from a prejudicial point of view, well then, you know, he's going to be in trouble because he will not see it. And, of course, let's never forget or underestimate the fact that there is a Leviathan out there willing to stamp truth out of existence. They know that truth rises. They know that there's a higher awakening taking place. So they will have, as you said earlier, psychologists coming on to debunk conspiracyites. They'll have their media outlets just, again, debunk it. But at the same time, they've now realized that they need to co-opt it because the movement is just too fast and too strong. There's movies, there's documentaries, there's YouTube, there's so much stuff coming out there. And so now the mainstream is even going to have to co-opt some of these elements of the conspiratorial movement, like you're saying, the Glenn Becks and these gatekeepers are doing. Michael Moore even did it in a weaker way. And then in the next few years, you get somebody who does it a little bit stronger. And then the next, you know, few years, you'll have somebody who'll even do it stronger. And for goodness knows, you know, next thing you know, Glenn Beck will have Alex Jones as a weekly guest. He'll have the Alex Jones spot on his own show because they know that the demographics want it and will not take it and accept it.
That is really interesting. I want to talk more about that. One thing, though, on religion before we leave that subject. Basically, many different religions around the world have been handling the education of humanity for many thousands of years now. And one thing that you mentioned is that they consider the fact that evil is something external, that have that kind of approach to it. Maybe you can tell us a little bit more just about that, Michael.
Okay, yeah, that's true. Everything, Satan, they came up with Satan. And it's not just the Christians, they've all got it. Just in the same way the simple commercial tells you that your athlete's foot is some little germ that just happened to attack poor old you. Or let's even say the flu. Oh my goodness, you know, it's superstition of the Middle Ages. Then they used to believe in demons, now they believe in disease, and they believe it in the same way. It's phenomenal how this, you know, is. And of course, isn't that part of what we were talking about earlier, that they are desperate to divide you from your own biology and your own psychology? And in many ways, biology is psychology. So always make sure that the nemesis is external so that you are never empowered. You have no psychic immunity, and you have no biological immunity. But I want to make one more comment about religion before we finish on that subject, and that is that when I critique myself religion, and I do it quite harshly and abrasively, and I know that, but never let me, you know, people imagine that I don't know, and the listener should also realize that within the tenets of the Orthodox religions is the secrets that I'm talking about. Everything that I'm talking about is corroborated by chapter and verse of the scriptures, as long as you know where to go and read those scriptures. For instance, in the Gospel of Thomas, there's a quote that pertains directly to the question of psychic hygiene and selfhood. And the line is, when you know yourselves, then you will be known, and you will know that you are the sons of the living Father. But if you do not know yourself, then you are poverty, and you are poverty. That's meant to be the words of Jesus in the Gospel of Thomas, a very ancient book that was never put into the Bible, but should have been.
Well, except my point is, apocryphal text, so that means that it's Gnostic, Michael. So that's another factor which is of the evil. You're not supposed to go there if you know what I mean, right? So and that's another problem, you know.
But many highbrow Christians do accept these apocryphal gospels, the intelligent ones, because you never argue with an idiot. Forget what the Orthodox think. But the ones who've done their homework and studied the Dead Sea Scrolls and who've looked into the whole question of the pagan origins of Judaism and Christianity, they have great reverence for these documents. And there's just as much legitimacy to say that Jesus spoke those words that are in these various Gnostic Gospels as there is, if not more credibility, than to say that he's the words that are in the New Testament, when even the Jesus Seminar has proven that 80%+ of the words that are ascribed to Jesus in the New Testament and the works of Paul are not legitimate. So these Gnostic Gospels have a great deal of truth. And I can quote from John and many other books that even talk about the need of the temple of God is within. What I can do, you can do also, and more. You know, the whole concept of selfhood is in there. It's in all of the precincts of religion. It's in Jainism. It's in Buddhism. It is in Judaism, no less. In fact, it's very, very pronounced in Judaism, because in Judaism, unlike Christianity, believing in some supernatural messianic character or solar heroic, being is null and void. A man must be good and moral in this life. This is cardinal rules in Judaism, that you must be committing moral acts, just like the Decalogue, thou shalt not kill, right? Yeah. They are extremely based on this, that man's own deeds in this life is all that is required for salvation, to do as little evil and as much good as you can. But you see, the psychological perspective takes that theory and says, okay, but what is evil? You may be doing evil and not even realize it. What is the anatomy of evil? What is the anatomy of good? What is the human consciousness? Like we were talking about earlier, what is the human consciousness? What are the motives? And then when you listen to these great shows like Alex Jones's latest, Fall of the Republic and many other shows across the board in the conspiracy movement, they will admit, won't they, that the Bertrand Russell School and the Frankfurt Schools and the media and all of these pundits and the Brzezinskis are always affecting us. They're talking to us in the subtextual ways that affect the limbic and the emotional elements of the brain. In fact, I remember Alan Watt made actually, in my opinion, he made the key statement in Fall of the Republic, in which he noted that the television and the media, you see, is brainwashing us in this way, where it bypasses the rational circuitry and it goes straight into the sort of limbic areas. But then can't the audience realize then that that is a tantamount, it's absolute 100% proof that the government is psychologically up to speed?
Yeah.
And then when, Michael DeSarnes and come along and say, listen, you're going to have to arm yourself up with that psychological knowledge, they all yawn. Yeah, what do you want to talk about that? Don't you know that the psychologists are part of the conspiracy? What the hell is this? So I include all of the other critiques. I do say there is an external, Leviathan out there that needs to be addressed and understood and studied.
Yep.
But you have to understand how it even came into existence in the first place, and that is the story of psychology. There is absolutely no way. It goes exactly along with the quote that you read at the opening of the show.
So, in one sense, then, it seems that what Alex Jones is doing is very good, because he's informing people on the surface level of the grander, it's conspiracy 101, things that people everywhere should know about in that sense. And he, from my point of view, I see that his job is to make it simple in one way for people, and especially maybe for people who are new into this and are just coming in. In one way, I don't know Alex or his motives is, but it sounds to me that he's up for he wanna get a mass awakening happening, so to speak, across the globe, and then the way to do that is to make it very simple and don't go too much down into details. And that's also why many people now are criticizing him. Why doesn't he talk about this or that or the other? Why does it leave that out and so forth? But on one level, I think that he considers his job is to bring this to as many people as possible. And on that regard, he's doing a good job, I think. But then it's up to people continuing from that to go deeper into these levels. And I guess that's what you're saying as well, Michael, that people need to continue the path from there, from after leaving off and realizing what the kind of material that Alex is talking about. What's the next step? How do we solve these problems? And maybe it's not going back to the Constitution. Comments, Michael?
Well, that the whole thing of the Constitution is monumentally important. Maybe we can talk about that earlier, because probably the only criticism I have of Fall of the Republic is, and with a lot of the people who are coming from the Alex Jones school, is that they do imagine that they have what's called idolatry, parchment idolatry. They're still worshiping this worthless piece of paper, the Constitution, that is literally constructed by the very Federalists that they claim to be fighting. It's so obvious, and if people have read my article on the Constitution Con, they'll know the reasons why, that is nothing but a federal manifesto that's left the door open to the very oligarchical forces that Jones and others doesn't mention, the British royals and the European establishment there, you know. But maybe we can get into that later. One thing I would say positively about Alex, I love his work, and he educates people. First of all, if he gets people to think and he provides them with certain facts, that is a huge piece of it. That can never be underrated. Just wakening people up to go and study and think, and then he hands them the various data. And these silly chumps who just sit there expecting him to lead them and be a guru, you know, of course, this is utterly infantile. Yep. Because he's talking largely to an infantile audience that's been dumbed down all of these years. But two other things that he brings up are very important, and others like him do as well. And one is that, look, you can either be chased by a giant whale or shark and swallowed by the shark that is chasing you. That's one way to be eaten. Or, as Alex and others are pointing out, the shark can be stock still in the water, and you can swim right into the jaws of your own volition. Mm. He is pointing out how that particular dynamic works, and he's asking people, no, don't do that. He's also saying something brilliant, which is that, look, the solutions to all the problems that he has discovered is simply to look at the problem itself. A solution is not something you're going to apply like some sort of lotion. It's an examination of the problems itself. What you're talking about is that he focuses on the political and the sociological and the economic. And that's absolutely marvelous. There's a really great, you know, need for that.
Yeah.
My work, again, you know, your work, what we're doing, it's focusing now more on the psychology, that there's something that calls all of this into being. And that's about the only, I think, difference between us, you know.
Mm-hmm. In regards to many of the critics and so forth as well, in regards to Alex Jones and others as well, do you think it ultimately is really important to discuss, you know, who is behind the New World Order if they don't include because commonly you get, is it the royals, is it the Zionists, is it the Vatican, is it the Freemasons? There's a few other groups out there as well, but ultimately if you don't include, are you participatory in that as well? Do you think it's a moot point? It doesn't matter what we discuss, so to speak, or even what the outcome of that is. What do you think, Michael?
No, I think it's crucially important. My work has gone a long way to do that. I identify the leading cabals as atomists, and we've done shows on that. And now you have other scholars like David Icke and Alex Jones, who are pointing to the Bilderbergers, you see, and that you have the Lyndon LaRouche / Webster Tarpley / Dr. John Coleman's, who I believe rightly talk about the British oligarchical system, as I also do. And you have the G. Edward Griffins, who will then point to the Federal Reserve, you see, and the Jewish bankers. They're right, by the way. These are the same Jewish interests out of New York that funded Hitler and communism and every other tyranny you can imagine. And it's also behind the neocons and the demicons and the people who are funding Zionist there. You have the wonderful work of David Livingstone that I hugely recommend people listen to. Your four excellent, Henrik, interviews with him, where he talks about the Muslim Brotherhood facet of this.
Yeah.
Which is ultimately a Jewish, let's say more specifically, Judaic Atonist brotherhood under the guise of Muslimism, because ultimately those who know history know that there's not a shred of difference between the occultic, Kabbalic Judaism and the so-called Islam, the rise of Islam, or let's say the rise of the Muslim Brotherhood, who are basically nothing more than Frankists. They're Kabbalists out of Armenia and out of Egypt, and also out of other countries like Spain. And, you know, they're connected into the whole Merovingian and also Atonist dynastic web, you see.
And that's part of the royal web as well, isn't it, in one way? You know, the elite bloodline families and so forth has a tie-in between the British royal family and the Zionists as well, right?
No question about it. In fact, there's not a single leading Zionist family, be it the Rothschilds or Sassoon, Warburg, Schiff, and many, many others that are less well known, who have not married at least one son or daughter into the royalty of Europe. There is not one family within these elite Gaonim, is the real term for them is Gaonim, who are the more Jewish. But I mean, I'm talking about Jewish on the surface. These people have massacred Jews.
Well, that goes into the whole Ashkenazi or Sephardic Jew question as well, right there, right?
Yes, it does. And basically what people have to realize is that there's a humongous difference between what's called a Judite and a Jew. To make the point is the analogy I always use, which is that the Pope is a Judite, even though he's the head of the Roman Catholic Church. And the Queen of England is a Judite, even though she's the head of the Protestant religion. Because, as I said, behind the lodge door, these silly little divisions of Muslim, Islam, Zion, Jewish and Christian have no meaning at all. They're all Judites. They're all Atonists. They're all Gaonim. This is the cabal that controls the whole situation here. Of course, I would love it to be in a perfect world where the David Livingstones and Alex Joneses all knew this and took this on board. It would help their work, I believe. But we're not living in a perfect world, and they don't, and that's okay. And remember, I also tell the viewer and the listener, do not for a moment imagine that one person has all the answers. You can't turn to any of us and say they alone have the answers. You need all of them put together. You need the David Icke's, the Alex Joneses, the David Livingstones, the Michael Sarnes, you know, the Henrik Palmgrens. You need all of the people who are looking at this thing. We're there as a community, an alternative research community. You need the Ralph Ellis's, you see, who've got key pieces. And once you understand those pieces, I mean, really have read it, really understand it, it changes your perspective of life, and it makes you smarter and more eloquent and articulate than even people who've got the highest degrees in the world. Do you know that their works are suffering? Books have come out in the last 5 years, Henrik, by the leading lights. And I'm talking about books on the Bible, books on the Gnostics, books on Moses the Egyptian or the Israelites and the Exodus. Books are still coming out from the top brass from Oxford and Cambridge, and do you know how silly and pathetic and full of holes these people's books are because they haven't understood what the Ralph Ellis's and the Mustafa Gadalas and all of these other people have talked about? So this is, I have living proof that those people who happen to be into the writers and researchers of the alternative research community are in far greater intellectual grasp of the facts of what's going on in the world than even the top intellectual academic brass today. And that can be proved.
Absolutely. And just want to comment on one point there, because you mentioned before, just in terms of psychology, that is a new study in itself. It sprang up around 20s, 30s, something like that. And I'd say the same thing about the conspiracy movement, because you say, you know, that not everybody have all the answers yet. And that's true, because we're still trying to figure things out here, and we're all learning as we go along. So I see that hopefully the conspiracy movement will be also wiser because of study that and time that goes into researching these topics. So 10, 15 years down the road, I think collectively, so to speak, if we can use that term then, we'll know a heck a lot more, you know, about the subject matters and who's really is control. And the more will, you know, reveal itself as time goes, and the more research that is being done. So I'm still looking at this from a positive point of view, so to speak, Michael.
Yeah, me too.